This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Thank you for coming up today. Beautiful day. We had snow early in the morning, and now we have sunshine. Get a little bit of everything. So some of us have been here almost 2 days at the beginning of a practice period that's a week long, and we've started some Dharma discussions on various aspects of our practice. And yesterday, for example, we did giving, generosity. One of the great perfections. And today, I thought I'd say a few words about virtue. It's also known as morality, also known as right action, right conduct. So this is really a big topic. I mean, basically, this is our life in the world. How we conduct ourselves. Basically, getting to the heart of it. That's what John De Dolori, American Zen master, said. He said that this subject, also called the precepts, are the heart of Buddhist practice. Goes right to how to be most true to our deepest nature, which the Buddha encouraged us is the same nature as his. He said, "I'm just a human being," and I'm going to keep, in the words of another Japanese Zen master, the Buddha didn't say this. I'm going to keep refining my life. And he did. He practiced after his great insight and awakening to what it was to be human and how to be in the world. He practiced the rest of his life, 45 years. He meditated every day. So that's another big piece of how this works. And that's exactly what we're doing here. We're dedicating some special time and intensive time to really practicing meditation in the spirit of the Buddha, as he did. So I'll offer a few touchstones, because it is a huge practice, and it also goes on our whole life, just as it went on for the Buddha's whole life. So we don't have endless time to talk about it, but we have endless moments in our life until our life is no longer, to keep practicing. So sometimes virtue seems like too big a word, and we don't relate to it, or morality seems like too big a word, because we forget about that part of us, and that's why we keep practicing somehow. There are lots of reasons we do. Habit's a huge reason why we forget what kind of actions are helpful and beneficial. Haste is another one. Being in a hurry, which we're culturally predisposed to. So we come and sit down and take a little time to just be with ourselves and get in touch with what's going on at the foundation in our heart, what's going on in the heart. And sometimes it's just simply not being aware of actions. So another thing that meditation practice allows us to get in touch with is a wider awareness. We kind of open our perception even of what's going on in the world and in us in many levels. Because we live individually and we live in relationship in small groups, and we live in relationship on a planet of 7.5 billion people. So there are many opportunities for each of us to see how we are with our virtue and our sense of morality. So meditation practice, Zazen, is our friend. It's our ally. It's what keeps us in touch with who we are. Because no matter how many times we forget, we're still basically, we still basically incline to virtue. That's in the early Buddhist texts. Incline your mind to the wholesome. What are wholesome actions? What are wholesome attitudes within ourselves and in the larger world we live in? So there's another way in which Zazen kind of works. It's always still a little bit, it's a little bit hard to explain because it's paradoxical, but it's a little bit, it's that Zazen allows us clear seeing when we bring our intention to really practice, it allows us to see in every moment, and it also unfolds over time. So that's why we keep practicing, just like the Buddha did. It's not that we just get it and then we have all the answers of how to be in our life and in the world, because the circumstances keep changing. The situations are always different. And this is true at every juncture. I mean, you just don't know what's going to be coming around the corner sometimes when you drive over 17, for example. or many other examples. Each of us are called to, in Zazen practice, to look at our own lives, to look at ourselves and see what our situations are. We're called to get to know ourselves better. And it's not only seeing and kind of apprehending in that way, but actually Zazen also gives us this whole body-mind experience, a whole integrated heart-body-mind way of being. And that's kind of the real magic. And the Buddha's great insight and gift to us, like, he had to put some effort in, but then he saw that this is just what it takes, keeping at it, keeping at it. So the precepts, and Zen particularly, Soto Zen particularly emphasizes the precepts a lot, but not only in this tradition. I mean, they're common, the precepts are common in all Buddhist traditions, and any form of Buddhist retreat you go on, you do take the precepts at the beginning of the retreat, at least. So they're guidelines for us. They are kind of touchstones to remember, guidelines. And they're also descriptions of how we are. So remembering that, because sometimes we forget that we are virtuous. We're also enculturated to think that we're not good enough. Often we have to keep being better, and we do want to keep being better. So these virtues are part of, and giving, generosity are part of the great perfections, which is a word that's a bit problematic for many people. So the perfections, I like to say it's okay because the perfections include the imperfections. There's no way around that, you know. The imperfections go with the perfections. They're just like one side of the coin and the other. That's practice. So these guidelines, these precepts, are expressed in different ways in different Buddhist traditions, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the way we're expressing them here, and particularly the language that I learned from my teacher, Angie Roshi, who learned it from Koben, who founded this center almost 50 years ago, and not only this center, but others, and talked about the precepts in a particular way. So there are the pure or positive precepts, and those are embracing and sustaining right action. Embracing and sustaining every good. Embracing and sustaining all beings. Well, now, there's a lot. that says an incredible amount in a few short words, but it's a little abstract. It's up to us to see what does that mean in my life when I'm with my kid, or when I'm with my boss, or whatever your circumstances are. What does it mean to embrace and sustain every good, right actions? We can look in ourselves and maybe see what would be the right course of action for us to take. And we do need to have some clear understanding of what actions we need to take. But they're always intercontextual. They're always in in a bigger circle or a bigger spiral. So, in embracing and sustaining all beings, it's a huge world. And there are many beings in it that we actually can recoil from embracing and sustaining. Just look at the political world. It's like a big world out there. And what does it mean to... to embrace and sustain all beings. And also there are all those beings that we're maybe not aware of. There's the whole biota that in the world we live in that sustains us in a way. But how do we embrace and sustain that? All the microscopic bacteria, viruses, mycelae that live underground and above ground that keep the whole web of life going. Wow, how to relate to that? How does that work together with right action in the choices we actually make to do this or do that? Eat this way, clothe ourselves this way, choices as social beings, as consumers. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot we can look at in all beings. And the way they work together, all three of these positive precepts. So, one thing about being up here is you get to hear yourself repeat yourself a lot. So I guess that means you'll hear me repeat myself as well. But that's, we need reminders. I personally need reminders. We need reminders. That's why we chant these precepts. That's why we sit down and say them to ourselves if we're not doing meditation in a group or on sesshin. No. Because we forget. We start living at the top level. We forget to sink into the whole being. Start just living kind of superficially. So here goes Zazen, meditation practice. Here too, there's a range, but I would go for you can't get enough of it. Not that I've ever sat like Bodhidharma in a cave for 9 years, and so there's one part of the range. but undertaking long intensive retreats, yes, I'm a fan. I've done that, and think it's a good thing. It helps me anyway. It was recommended by Buddha, so I'll go with that too. So there are the positive, pure precepts. And here come the other ones, where we really get into the nitty-gritty. So-called prohibitory or just the precepts. So these are the basic five, which are the touchstones for this morning, and there are 10 in Zen usually, but we won't go into all those today because we have limited time. And each of these precepts, just the three pure ones and the five basic ones, could be a week, could be a life. You can just choose one and focus on that. Sometimes that's a help to do that. Just take one precept and see how that's working in your life for a period. So, I like the way Koban put these. No killing life. No lying. No stealing. No sexual misconduct. No abusing intoxicants. So it's very simple. These are very simple the way he put them, but they're phrased a little differently in other places. But just the first one, no killing life. Often it's just no killing, but Koban added life. So that's a koan to work with, because that's by the fact that we're alive, we're taking life. We are part of the circle of life and death. So every time we breathe, and sometimes we even take in a little insect. I'm sure that's happened to many when you're hiking or something, but every time we breathe, we're taking in invisible and forms of life that we don't even know about. We're just like beyond our comprehension in a certain way, certainly our basic sensory apparatus. You may know that the Jain tradition in India wear masks because they do everything they can to try to keep from taking life. That's their one precept that they really try to keep. And I don't know any Jains. I've just heard about them from Indian Buddhist teachers and from reading about them. So I'm not 100% sure, but they also kind of realize that it's impossible, and yet they keep to that precept. They have a very strict diet. By eating, like anytime you eat anything, you're interrupting a life pattern. So that can go on. That's a continuum also. And people have different ways of holding that precept. But it's just something for each of us to look at and see how we want to hold it. No lying. Wow. We know how destructive lying is in our personal life, and now we're getting to see it in our social fabric in a very clear way for many people. So how to hold that, and how to remember holding that embracing and sustaining all beings. Another thing we chant in Zen, which is in a way such a comfort, is that delusions are endless. I vow to end them. It's always going on that we come up against, like lying, and that's that could, you know, being the white lies, these are deep, deep questions about virtue and morality that not only Buddhism has, but all spiritual traditions have these, and not even spiritual traditions, but people who inquire deeply into life, philosophy. So what we have is our practice to help support us in looking at these things. No lying. And no sexual misconduct. Such a powerful force in our life. You know, it's actually part of the life force. And we're in a particular social era where a lot of different ways of looking at that are coming up as well. So where am I about it? Where are we about it? And it's not that it's not like you gotta go around and examine everything. I'm talking about it, but just putting things out there. But it's not a question really of examining. Sometimes actual reflection is really a good thing to do, to just sit down with it. If something ruffles you or disturbs you, then, you know, just sit down quietly and reflect. You might do a little zazen before or not. But basically, just keeping up your practice, it unfolds for you. Little moments of aha, insight, things come up. How I am about this. And the same abusing intoxicants. Wow, it seems like now is a period where a lot of this stuff is coming up in our social life. I just read last week that more people die of opioid addiction than automobile accidents in the United States last year, 2018. So, but then there's everything down to social drinking or a glass of wine with dinner or other kinds of intoxicants, like constantly checking your devices. Usually intoxicants are ways to distract ourselves. They're ways to not look at other things which are going on with us that we really don't want to look at. But that may not be the case for you. I mean, that's just a generalization. So, maybe this phrase, and I can't attribute it, but I've heard it in Zen practice in different places here and there. It's like, Zen practice is knowing what's the appropriate action in any given situation, which kind of means in any moment. So that's what I brought as touchstones for virtue, morality. One thing, I said it's part of us, this knowing, this deep knowing is part of us. And just not to forget, we also have a conscience, and that can be a help to us. Sometimes but the awareness that comes from Zazen is just being aware of our conscience instead of just letting it slide. So, perhaps you have questions or something to offer? Yes.
How do vulnerability and morality intersect?
So the question was, how do vulnerability and morality intersect? And I'd like to just add a little something to vulnerability, which is openness, which in my experience, they go together. So the more vulnerable I feel, and this is often an interior feeling, it's totally an interior feeling, the more open I am. And then the more I'm able to see. So I think they can intersect very directly. But then vulnerability might mean different things to different people. It doesn't mean to me exposing yourself to harmful situations, for example, which is a common use of the word vulnerable. But vulnerable in a spiritual sense is an opening. And then I think morality becomes clearer to oneself. Thank you.
I was just reflecting on Koban's version of no killing life, and whether adding life to it can lifts us above individual life, such as a plant that we eat, to nurturing the life itself in a more ecological sense, so that we don't harm the environment, we create sustainable ways of feeding ourselves, and so overall we're supporting life. And killing life would be, for example, loading carbon into the environment and changing the climate and maybe eating a lot of beef because it uses up a lot of resources, or however you want to think about these balances. Do you think that that's a possible way of looking at it?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Actually, I was hoping someone would bring that up. That certainly was in my mind the whole time, but I didn't want to get into all of it. So that's exactly what the pure precept sustaining every good, sustaining all being. So thinking about these things, yes. So the positive, sustaining every good, sustaining all beings, nurturing, that's a key word, to actually positive actions, embracing and sustaining positive actions. Every act we take, we can look at in the light of virtue. And once again, I don't mean to be overwhelming, but choices do need to be made. You know, I mean, each of us can do what we can, and each of us needs to know what we can do. That's absolutely true. So I thank you very much for bringing in all those very specific things, because those are exactly embracing and sustaining every good, every being, every action. Every consumption we make can be a lens through which to look at our relationship to our virtue and our morality. Everyone. So those specific ones, you could even say growing gardens, you know, doing your own, growing your own food, preserving your own food. Thank you very much.
One question then, and something else came. I was wondering if you could share a little bit about working with your teacher, and maybe what connected this was where you said, I couldn't think of how you said it, but you're saying, oh, it's two sides of the same thing. You're saying...
the perfection and imperfection?
Yes. So I'm thinking about, you know, maybe, I don't have to work on that precept or whatever. Maybe what we're... It's sort of like, how do you direct your practice, or maybe how do you work with the teacher? When you don't really recognize where you need to work, I guess I'm just kind of open. I'm a little curious about your studentship with Angie, if you have anything to share on that, or...
Okay, thank you. Well, one thing you said was, if you say, oh, I don't have to work on that, there's a clue. You know, there's a clue. That's pretty direct. But I think your kind of bigger question, if I may paraphrase you, is how do you work with... how do you work with what you don't recognize? And then there is the sub-question of how do you work with your teacher with what you don't recognize? But of course, the big question is, how do we work with what we don't recognize? We have to trust ourselves. We have to deeply trust ourselves. And also, because our teacher may not always be with us. We may not have a teacher because of whatever circumstances. We may not. So, the most important thing is to trust yourself. And then, of course, working directly with the teacher is a great benefit and a great blessing. And you can just directly ask your teacher, if is there anything you see that I'm doing, you know, that where I need a little help? And often the teacher will point something out to you. And I will say, in my experience, I'll just tell one little anecdote. I remember when I first began a Buddha Dharma practice in a different tradition. And my teacher said, well, Carolyn, I would just say, bring more mindfulness. And I just went, what? That's what they always say. It's like, that's what the Zen masters say. Just go sit on your cushion if they don't actually whack you a little bit, you know. So sometimes your teacher will point something out and you still may not want to look at it. You think, I don't need more mind. I don't need more zazen. I'm doing plenty of zazen. But the basic thing is to trust yourself and know you're human. Remember the example of the Buddha. He kept on meditating. He didn't call it zazen, but he was sitting down long periods every day and then going on long retreats once a year, 3-month period. And And he was human. There, all these stories are myths, but the mythology has truths to it. That Mara, the tempter, kept appearing to Buddha till the very end, and he was human. So Mara would come in the form of like no sexual abuse, and you know, hundreds of millions of bevies of beautiful women to tempt him with sexual things, or a great feast and intoxicating beverages to tempt him with sensual things, etc. And the Buddha would have to say, "I see you." So we can trust ourselves and be kind to ourselves, in other words, is what I'm trying to say. We just have to be a little kind to ourselves too. We're human, we can't always see everything all the time. There's an idea of perfection that is also deeply enculturated, that we should be seeing everything. We should have the answers and we should know it. We should be seeing everything all the time. But it's not the way it works. It's not the way life is. So, thank you. Is it time? Okay. Well, thank you all for joining us again today, and I know many have seen your faces at these Sunday events and at different times here at Jikoji. And
thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.